It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on 95.5 WSB. Brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
It's 6:07 on a Saturday morning. This is Lawn and Garden. I'm Walter Reeves with Georgia Gardener. I'm here to help you be more successful in your garden. And I realized yesterday that I have a hidden talent I didn't know I had. And that talent is I speak a language that some people don't know. A lot of people perhaps don't know the language called plant. I speak plant. And so if you feel like you're not communicating well with your plant, if you don't know exactly what your plant needs because you can't understand what the plant is telling you, if you'll call me, I will interpret for you. I will tell you what your plant is trying to say, or I'll tell you what you can say to your plant to get your plant to do what you want it to do. So, I speak plant. Call me. 404-872-0750 is the number. 404-872-0750. I spoke bug yesterday. You remember, I believe it was last week that I said that one of the things that I had started feeling, I walked in my front yard underneath my big crepe myrtle tree, and I started feeling little creepy crawlies on my neck, and I know exactly what it is. Every year, when you have a long fall, where the frost takes a while to come around, if you have a long fall, you'll get crepe myrtle aphids. Crepe myrtle aphids, they live up in the crepe myrtle tree and they suck the sap out of the crepe myrtle leaves, and their population builds so much that they start falling out of the tree. And also there's some winged forms as well. They fly out of the tree. During the summer you don't see them. During the summer they're up in the tree and they don't fly much, and so you just really don't see any aphids in the tree unless you see the black sooty mold, the honeydew, of course, that comes down underneath the tree. So I noticed this yesterday, I guess it was, as I walked out underneath the crepe myrtle, that these aphids were more numerous. And then when I came in the house, there were five of them on my neck, crawling around on my neck. It was creepy. It is really, really creepy. But the deal is, you can't do much about them. At this time of year, when the population is built so high, you really don't have a way to spray an insecticide up in the tree. You don't really have a way to get a systemic insecticide up into the leaves. So what do? You just wait for frost. Wait for Kirk Mellish to give us a frost. And as soon as we get 32 or lower, then we'll be fine. All those crepe myrtle aphids will go away. So if you have big crepe myrtles around your house and you feel creepy things on your neck, those are crepe myrtle aphids. One more thing. A talented, observant listener sent me a picture of something I thought was extremely interesting. I'd never seen a picture of this before. It was a big yellow insect, about 3/4 of an inch long, nice, big and fat, big, you know, wings on it, 3/4 of an inch long. And then attached to this big insect were two smaller ones. Looks exactly like the bigger one, but they're smaller, about 1/2 inch long, each one of them. And he said, I think there's some yellow jackets getting it on in my backyard. And he is exactly right. The queen yellow jacket is pretty big. She's 3/4 of an inch long, big and fat. And the worker or male yellow jackets are smaller. They're the normal size you see at a picnic. The smaller ones, the male ones, are right now breeding with the female, with the queen yellow jackets. And the queen yellow jacket will go and hide in a log or under some leaves or something like that for the wintertime. And next spring, she'll come back out. She'll start laying eggs. She'll start a new nest, and the new nest will have new yellow jackets in it. And the worker yellow jackets, the male yellow jackets, will all die. So this picture, this photograph that the guy sent me was exactly correct. The queen yellow jacket was having a little fun with her two male yellow jackets there. And if I have a moment, I'll post it online because it's one of the most fascinating pictures I've seen in a while. We go now to the phones with, let's see, where's my little cursor here? There it is. Let's go to Griffin and our friend Nicole. Hey, Nicole, good morning.
Mr. Reeves.
Mr. Nicole, how you doing?
Fine.
Good.
Is all your tropical inside?
You always ask me questions that I find hard to answer because I try my best to tell the truth on this show. And the truth is all the Christmas cactus are inside. Yes. All the amaryllis are inside. Yes. I think, though, this year, Nicole, the Meyer lemon is not going to come inside. It just looks too scraggly. It doesn't have any flowers on it, any fruit on it at all, and I'm tired of it, and I'm just going to let it go. So I do not have all of my tropicals in because one of them is not coming in, and that's the Meyer lemon.
The same way here, because everything in life has to have an end.
Yeah.
And I think they suffer too much because they're not from here.
And some things have to be taken inside for protection or they freeze. Bougainvillea is another thing that some people have. Sure, bougainvillea is a tropical plant, has to go inside or it will freeze.
Yes, because this morning is kind of cool.
Yeah, 36 degrees right now.
What about, the tropical that... I want to say that if you bring tropical inside, yeah, you need to know how much light they need.
Good point. If they have leaves, like my Christmas cactus, it needs light all winter long. Light, light, light. You can't put it in a basement or something like that and think it's going to live in the basement within the dark. No, it's got to have light.
And the light this time of the year changed from, it's now southwest.
Yeah.
So you have to know all your house is built, because when it comes to springtime, it changes to northeast.
And be much more direct, too.
Yes, and if you put a thing like a cactus when it's north, don't have no light, it's fine, you know. But other tropical, you need to know how far from the window to put them so they don't burn out or no light enough.
High. Yeah, I think African violets are that way. I find people sometimes that have, a dozen African violets are all blooming, look beautiful. And I say, how did you make these African violets so pretty? And they say, well, we just found a window that they liked and we put them in that window. We don't move them. So you're right. You got to have a place that the plant is happy, that has the right amount of light, not too little, not too much. And sometimes it's just a matter of experimenting, just moving it around to the south window, to the north window, to the east window, maybe during the summertime for the north window and during the wintertime for the south window, so it gets more light in the wintertime.
Unless you like Mr. Reed that's got a light.
I have that big light in my sunroom, and I have two. I have the LED kind that's just sort of a pink or purple light on it, and I have the fluorescent bulbs too. And that's something, Nicole, that's a great question too, because I have had questions from listeners about which kind of light is best for indoor plants here in the wintertime, and the LED display, LED fixture, I guess you call it, that has the LED bulbs in it, is so bright that I can't keep it on in my sunroom where I stay a lot of the day, where I work during the day. And I can't keep it in there on because it's just too purple, too bright. Whereas the fluorescent bulbs are not so bright. I can put those around my plants and not be bothered by that light. So, the having light is good, but you got to sort of coexist with that light inside.
So the hibiscus needs to come inside.
The tropical hibiscus, yes.
Yeah, over the weekend.
Yeah.
But the fern, they can stay outside for another week or two because they come from the north and they like the cool soil.
Well, yeah, I guess so. The Boston fern and Kimberly Queen and things like that. Do you bring your ferns in, Nicole?
Yes, when it comes, not this time of the year, but when it comes like snow and ice, yeah. And some fern, like Christmas fern, they're going to stay outside.
Oh,
because,
yeah, they're completely hardy. Yeah.
Yes, and they stay underneath the tree. If you love, something underneath your tree, Boston fern, and there's a fern that turns red, isn't it?
Autumn fern turns red.
Oh, really?
Yeah, autumn fern is a little purple, really, purple red, autumn fern does.
So depending on the soil, too,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. But going back to your Boston ferns, of course, under the porch, people hang them on the porch in front of their house, and they look gorgeous. They grow so big. Boston ferns are so attractive right about now. But if the cold weather comes, of course, it'll freeze. You won't have any more Boston fern to look at if you if you don't bring it inside. But it's so big, and if you don't give it a lot of light inside, it'll start dropping all those green fronds of the Boston fern all over the floor, all over the carpet. And so they're a real mess. And most people, frankly, Nicole, they throw the Boston fern away. They don't try to keep it during the wintertime. It's just too much trouble, too much mess.
Well, because they've got pot bound too, those ferns, they don't have no water.
Oh, my gosh,
it's so invasive,
Yeah, if you take one out of the pot, you say, good gosh, look at all the roots of it. It's like a rock. They're so hard in the pot. Boston ferns are interesting plants. They're great for decoration, but just during the spring, summer, and fall, during the wintertime, I say compost them.
Yes, and I want to say that my house is like a jungle right now. Because I need to know exactly where each plant's going to go and stay there for the whole winter.
Yeah. You got to plan things out so you have a path between the bedroom and the bathroom and the kitchen and the living room so you know where the plants are going.
Yes, yes. And the cat's going to be looking for place to go.
Yeah, it's got to have a place to. Well, I know where I'm going because I need to go out of the show right now and go to a break. Nicole, it's great talking to you. We'll see you next Saturday.
Enjoy your day.
Enjoy your day as well. It's 6:18. We'll be back after this.
It's Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on 95.5 WSB. The news and traffic teams will be here first thing Monday morning to help you get to work on time and informed. Now back to Walter Reeves and his lawn and garden expertise on 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's news and talk.
And a quick weather update brought to you by Finley Roofing. Today, mostly sunny, great football weather, high of 55, low of 34. Tomorrow, the same. Warmer, a little bit warmer, high of 60, low of 37. Your full weekend forecast goes within 10 minutes on 95.5 WSB. John is up in Ball Ground, and John joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, John, good morning. Hey, John, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey.
Yeah. My question is, I've got a camellia that's in full bloom right now.
Yeah. Ooh,
and
yeah.
It's gotten to be where it's too tall. It's getting up where it's covering my windows just about. And I need to know how far can I cut it down and what time would be the best time to do that.
First, I need to teach you one nice word to know. Do you know this is a Sasanqua camellia, John?
No, I did not.
That's one of those things that Southern people, I don't know, they revel in knowing what kind of camellia they have. So just for you today, because you're my friend, Sasanquas bloom in the fall up until, I don't know, middle of December. And then from middle of December on, the Japanese or Japonica camellias start blooming. So you have a Sasanqua camellia. Now, I don't know what variety it is, but the type is a Sasanqua. It blooms in the fall. And the thing about pruning it is you, of course, wait till after it finishes blooming. But you can take off pretty easily a third of the height or the total foliage on it during the wintertime without hurting it much at all.
Okay, because that was what I need to know. Like I say, it's gotten up kind of tall, and it's gotten awful wide also.
Yeah. Let me tell you, too, John, one of the tips about how to prune it, when you make your pruning cuts, if you have a limb, you have two choices. You can either make your pruning cut halfway back on the limb, or you can go all the way back to where it originates from a bigger limb or the trunk or something like that. So when you make your pruning cut and you don't want it to get much bigger, make your pruning cut all the way back to the trunk or to a bigger limb. If you do want it to get bigger, if you had a real small little Sasanqua and you wanted it to go from 2 feet to 4 feet pretty quickly, then you would make the pruning cuts right in the middle of a limb. And it'll have new sprouts. Those new sprouts come out and grow real quickly. And those quick new sprouts make it bigger. So you have these dwarfing, I guess, cut, which would be take it all the way back to where it originates. And then the make a bigger cut, which is halfway down the limb.
Well, I think that's what I need to do because, like I say, it's gotten a little too wide and too tall. So after it's finished blooming, I think I'll give it a good haircut.
Back to where it originates. That's what you want.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for calling, John.
Yep.
404-872-0750 is the number on Lawn and Garden. By the way, there's another way that you can get in and get your question answered. If you have the WSB Radio app on your cell phone, and you know it's a great value because you can get push notification about traffic, about weather, about emergency situations. It's good to have the WSB Radio app on your phone. But notice down in the bottom right-hand corner, the little microphone down there, if you push that microphone, you can record your observations about traffic or your observations about politics. You want to comment to Eric or someone who's on the radio. You can also ask your garden question. If you have the WSB radio app on your phone, use the open mic feature down the bottom right corner and just give us a quick summary of what you want. Name, where you're from, and a quick question, and we will put you on the air in the next hour. WSB radio app, it is two ways. It is easy to use and fun and educational on a Saturday morning. 6:28, we'll be back after news.
It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on 95.5 WSB. Brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
It is 6:36 on a Saturday morning. I'm Walter Reeves, the Georgia Gardener. This is Lawn and Garden, where we speak plant. We talk to your plants and teach you how you can talk to your plants and what you can interpret from what they're talking about to you. I'm here with Ashley Frasca. We're going to do something a little bit different this morning. I am going to ask Ashley to be in the studio with me. And when I answer a call online on the air, I want Ashley to pinpoint why I said that. I want to put my toes to the fire.
So my line is, why did you say that?
Why did you say that? Why? Put the why bird. The why bird is on
I
the
can
other,
do that.
Other side of the console here.
Well, I typically do that behind the scenes, so now I'll just do it on the air.
During the break, you say, why did you say that? Why did you say that? Well, we'll find out on the air. We'll see what happens. All right, let's get up here. Let's go to Sally in Avondale Estates. Hey, Sally. Good morning.
Walter.
Hi.
I've got about an 8-year-old cedar atlas that's probably 20 foot tall, and is losing its needles. I suspect it's due to the heat and drought. Is it a goner?
Is this the weeping atlas cedar, the one that's real contorted that goes back and forth?
No.
Wild around?
No, I do have one of those. That's another story, but this one is straight up.
You are right on two counts. One is that heat is not the friend of an atlas cedar. It likes to be North Carolina probably would be nice. I see them growing around Atlanta. I see some of them growing for 10, 15 years. So they can be a relatively long-lived, but 30, 40 years, no way, down here.
Okay.
So, you know, I think sort of, Sally, you just deal with it as it is. If it gets too ugly, it's not going to come back. It's not going to resprout new leaves or new needles next spring. So cut it down.
Is that the same with the contorted one also?
Yeah, same thing.
Okay. All right, well, I appreciate your time.
All right, thanks for calling, Sally.
Bye-bye.
All right, why a bird on the other side of the console?
Well, I'm trying to think like you, and you've got a chemistry background. I totally don't. I hate math and science.
Yeah.
So my thought would have led me to believe you would have, initially, that would have indicated, I mean, the environment is the first thing to consider,
but always.
Also disease. That would come into my mind as to why it would shed needles.
And that, you know, that's the thing about experience, because I've seen a bunch of atlas cedars that lose their needles. And if it were disease, she would have said it has spots, it has dead areas on one side of the tree, it has dead needles on the other side of the tree, it has a, you know, top of it's dying, the rest of it looks good. But it sounded to me like, and I probably should have clarified this with Sally, it sounded to me like she was saying the whole tree was losing needles.
That's what it sounded like
to me,
too.
And so if the whole tree is losing needles, then that says environment. Something's going on with the environment, and that's why I went to the heat and drought, knowing that that's two things that affect atlas cedar.
So atlas cedars and Lelands, would that kind of all fall into the same category?
Yeah, I think Lelands probably a little bit more tolerant of heat and cold than the blue atlas cedar is. But, they don't like being real heated up.
And would they be affected by a lot of the same diseases, too, like the canker and
absolutely.
All that?
Absolutely, same thing. Ashley Frasca, now I have a question for you.
Oh, boy.
Where did Leland cypress originate? What country?
Leland
cypress. No!
No, there is no country name. I don't know. I really don't know.
Wales.
Really?
Of all places in Great Britain, Wales. And that is why they're not all that tolerant of the heat that we have in Georgia. And so when we get really dry, really hot in Georgia, the bark on a Leland cypress is real thin, and so it cracks open, and that leaves an opening for all the fungi that fly around naturally to get in there and make cankers. So that's why Leland cypresses, after about 10 or 15 years, you see lots of little dead branches on them.
So many.
And sometimes the whole thing turns around and dies.
Well, we talked about that last week because I mentioned to you a neighbor of mine that just limbed his up. Yeah. You know, he was tired of looking at those bare spots. So he limbed it up all the way to the top of the fence line, and they look kind of funny. Now they're kind of top heavy, but hey, whatever works for you, right?
Whatever, if that's what you want to do, we're going to let you do it. Janice in Kennesaw, join us on Lawn and Garden.
Good morning.
Good
How are you doing, Janice?
We're doing well. How about you?
Yes, so I just want you to know that I absolutely have the most wonderful husband, and he always wants my garden to look beautiful.
Ooh, I wanted
some magnolia trees.
Okay.
So we went to the wonderful sale at Pike's. We bought two beautiful little gem magnolias, but we are not going to be able to plant them. I need to cut down some trees, and I'm just not going to be able to do it right now. So a couple of questions. One is, how do I keep them alive? When is the absolute latest time that we can plant the magnolias? And if I can't plant them by then, how do I make sure that they stay alive during the wintertime?
Up north, I would say when the ground freezes, you can't plant. Here in Georgia, the ground never freezes. So anytime you want to, Janice, anytime you feel like it. If you have a healthy tree in a pot, you can plant it.
So because I thought that we really should have planted it like now, like November.
Well, you should. I mean, that's the best time to do it is in September and October. But when can you not plant it? There's no forbidden day for magnolia ever. I mean, you have more care for if you plant on July. It's hot, of course, so you have to water it more. But you can still plant it in July. If you can get a nice husband of yours to go and water it properly, you can do it then.
So it's okay for to do it, like if we have to wait until like early spring, can we still do it in the spring?
Yeah, sure. But
watering, so important.
Exactly, because you, even though you're Janice, you say your husband is such a wonderful guy, wonderful fellow. Sometimes has those memory problems, you know, he forgets and thinks, oh, did I water that magnolia or not? And then he thinks it's football on the TV, so he goes inside to watch TV and doesn't ever water the magnolia in the pot. So the easiest way, I think, to hold that magnolia over until spring, if that's when you think you can plant it, is to go ahead and get hubby to dig a relatively nice hole, but it doesn't have to be the permanent best hole in the world. And simply plant them temporarily there and wait for the spring, take them out of the ground then. They won't have rooted very much, and just dig it out of the ground and plant them where you want.
Oh, and you know what? I think he can do that.
I bet he could. And particularly if you had cookies in front of his face, like, honey, cookies, Coca-Cola, iced tea, if you will dig me a nice big hole. Yeah, sure.
That is perfect. All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate
it. You're welcome, Janice. Tell him I said hey.
I will.
All right. Here to specialize in marital relations, I am. So that makes sense, actually, to wait till then to plant it permanently, but hold it in the ground.
There's always exceptions, you know. So you do think of fall as the best and most ideal time for trees and new shrubs to get established or transplanting, you know, woody shrubs, things like that.
Right.
But yeah, there's always that window of opportunity in the spring, and that's really when a lot of people are out and active and starting to think about their landscape. But let's face it, life happens, and a lot of us get really bad about remembering to water, whether it's your new sod, whether it's a new tree. So as long as you're, you know, vigilant about that, it should be fine.
I mean, that's why it was so good looking at Pike, is because they have employees who do that. There's no memory thing to do it. They say go out and water all the magnolias, and they water them all. So the magnolias looked great at Pike, but if her husband forgets and doesn't water it enough, doesn't know what he's doing, and it dries out during the wintertime between now and spring, then toast.
So any potted thing like that, though, that people may not be getting around to until the spring, does that make it a little more tender? So maybe those things need to come into a sunny garage or something?
I don't think so.
Okay.
As long as it's a hardy, woody plant like magnolia, you know, all the woody shrubs and things like that, leave
them outside.
Sure. I think you could do that. Carolyn is in Tucker, Georgia. Hey, Carolyn, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a slight hillside that has been covered with ivy for years, and I hate it. And so I'm gradually getting rid of it. And I'd like to put another ground cover down. I don't want anything like a juniper, you know, I don't want a shrubby thing.
Yeah.
I want a true ground cover that won't climb and, you know, that's maybe a little less aggressive in terms of being invasive. I need it to stay low. Do you have any suggestions? I was thinking of, like, I see this little kind of jasmine kind of stuff, or
periwinkle. I'm just wondering, I mean, what do you think?
How much sun does it have, Carolyn? How much sunshine does that hillside
have? It gets lots of sun.
Okay, good. If it was in the shade, I don't have many choices in the shade, but in the sunshine, the ivy, I'm sure, was reasonably happy there. But the Asiatic jasmine's not a bad choice at all. I saw you know what a hell strip is, Carolyn? The hell strip is
what?
A part. The hell strip. What's the hell strip, actually?
I don't know.
It's between the sidewalk and the street.
Okay.
When you have your house, you have a little strip that's about a foot and a half wide, 2 feet maybe wide, where the mailbox usually sits or stands.
Right.
That's called the hell strip because it's hard to get things to grow there. And I saw a hell strip about 50, 100 feet maybe long this past week, covered in Asiatic jasmine.
Pretty.
Just pretty and as solid and as nice looking as anything you could imagine.
It won't climb all over everything?
Once in a while, you get a little tendril that gets a little adventuresome and climbs up a trunk, but no, not like ivy.
Okay. Great. Well, then that might be what I want, because I have seen that growing around.
Yeah. There's a variegated kind, a variegated that's a green, sort of green, white, pink, a little bit of pink into it. I don't particularly like it, but you may, Carolyn. I don't know. You may.
I like
your taste
the dark
is different.
Green.
If you like the dark green, go with dark green. That's what I would go with. I like dark green.
Oh, okay, great. Well, then that sounds like it might be my answer. Thank you so much.
And easy to take care of, too. That's the good thing about it, is that you don't have to do much to it. It just sort of grows. It grows. If you don't do anything to it, it grows about 15, I guess, inches high. But actually, a lot of people just take a lawnmower and every spring, sometime in March, April, and just mow it. They set the mower as high as they can, and they just mow it real high, and the new growth comes out on the jasmine, and it looks great.
Low maintenance. I love it.
Low maintenance.
One of my favorites would be bougainvillea, but man, we don't have the heat here. Like, it goes crazy in Florida.
It's cold. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Where have you seen bougainvillea recently?
A friend of my mom's, a neighbor of my mom's, has beautiful in pots and things like that.
Yeah.
Bring them in.
Does she have success in bringing them in?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she just puts them in the garage, mm-hmm. and a little light or not much light? Or what?
Not much light, no.
And brings them out when it's warm in the spring?
Yeah.
How long does it take the bougainvillea to sprout up and start, you know, growing and blooming in the spring?
That I don't know.
Hmm.
I'll report back.
Report back.
Okay.
The other vine that people try to bring in, and I've never really had success with it, is the mandevilla, one that grows up your mailbox, you know?
Yeah, that one, I just let that go.
Yeah.
Just buy another one next year.
Pike has got them on sale.
Yep.
I promise you, Pike has got them on sale. It is 6:48. We'll be back after this.
Scott Slade here on your WSB Weekend. Enjoy Walter Reeves Lawn and Garden and Dave Baker's Home Fix-It this morning on 95.5 WSB. The WSB News team, meteorologist Kirk Mellish and I, will be here Monday morning with Atlanta's Morning News. Here's Walter.
She comes on like a rose, but everybody knows she'll get you in touch.
And a quick weather update brought to you by Finley Roofing. Mostly sunny today, great football weather, high of 55, low of 34. Tomorrow pretty much the same, but a little bit warmer, high of around 60 during the afternoon and low of 37 overnight. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes on 95.5 WSB. And Ashley Frasco, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution comes out tomorrow.
Shop and save with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Sunday coupons up to $315. Plus, get in-depth local news and details you won't find anywhere else. And, you know, you're speaking of the highs.
Yeah.
Low 60s tomorrow. That's pretty decent.
Not bad. Yeah.
But wouldn't you like to go somewhere warm? Right now would be a great time to go somewhere warm. So, we here at 95.5 WSB giving you a chance to win the vacation of a lifetime, a 7-night luxury beach getaway at St. Kitts. Learn more about that contest and register now on the WSB Radio app or on our website on WSBRadio.com. 7 nights stay at the Four Seasons and 2 Delta tickets to get there, nonstop flight. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Do it. WSBRadio.com. You and I are ineligible, by the way.
And also, don't forget, on the WSB Radio app, you can use the open mic feature to ask garden questions this morning. Use open mic on the WSB Radio app. Martin is in Marietta and joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, Martin, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Back at you.
Thank you.
Walter, I've got a question about fertilizer.
Yes,
sir. Years ago, I had a friend that loved fish emulsion as a fertilizer.
Sure.
I use it on tomatoes. I use it on, you know, just plants and stuff. Is that still something that's available? I haven't even looked to see if I can still buy it.
You know, I don't see it much. I think it's still available. Sometimes you don't see it at the big box stores, and Pike may or may not have it. I don't know. But sometimes hardware stores, Ace Hardware places have the Fish Emulsion. Mm-hmm. You always buy it online, too. But, yeah, it's still a good fertilizer. It's still a nice organic.
Okay.
I'm going to caveat here, Martin, that it certainly attracts the possums and the raccoons in the neighborhood. If they smell it, they'll come in and say, oh, Martin, look at you. It smells so good. And dogs sometimes get into it and roll around in it, too.
Okay. Just as long as it's doing what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, do what it's supposed to do as long as you, I think you apply it and water it in real good so the animals don't come.
Yeah, I diluted a little bit a lot. But, okay, makes me feel better.
I think you'll be fine.
Thank you.
So what are some of the benefits of fish emulsion over just any other kind of fertilizer?
Well, the nitrogen, you know, you got three chemicals in any fertilizer, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium that plants really like. And so fish emulsion has has a form of nitrogen that's pretty fast acting. So it is faster than, say, ground up chicken meal, chicken feathers, or other sources of organic fertilizer. So that's one thing. Number two, the bones of the fish give you phosphorus in it, and where's the potassium come from? I guess just from the natural.
The oil?
The oil, yeah, maybe so. I don't know really if that's true or not. But nonetheless, I know fish emulsion has been used since, was it Squanto? Squanto that taught the pilgrims to put a fish down in the hole when they planted their corn?
Huh.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So back in the old history books, you have a picture in my, fifth grade history book of the Indian, the Native Americans who are greeted the pilgrims, and they showed them how to put a fish into the hole when they planted the corn seed and made the corn grow good. So fish emulsion has been around a long, long time. It's 6:57 at News Talk WSB. Back to more Lawn and Garden after news.